Today, if we want to start this, I've got a PowerPoint to give today that goes back to the original point I made probably, I'm not sure when I started the series on having zeal for God for life. It's one thing now as we get so down with different things that happen to us, life can really be a bummer sometimes. But we ought to be really, when you think about it, the happiest people in this entire world knowing what we know. We have to suffer through things. Things hurt sometimes, but I hope that sometimes we can jump out of those doldrums and the sad parts and really be focused in on the happy parts of God's kingdom. It requires some work. It requires some reflection, but here we are on God's Sabbath day. This is what it's all about. You know, focusing in on God and His ways and what His plan is for us. There's just nothing like it when you think about that. And you roll back into history. And I've never really been interested in history so much. I remember in high school, I didn't have a very good history teacher. I did have a good one at Ambassador College. There was one that was a little bit boring, another one that was just brought history to life. Was able to go on the Jerusalem dig and look at some history there. For history buffs, I've never been able to find the burning bush. That one is gone a long time ago. The stone that killed Goliath, couldn't find that. I did see the tunnel that was built by Hezekiah's people, though. That was an absolute, no doubt about. The garden tomb, don't really know. You know, so many things you don't know, but things that you do know that are there. So if you ever get the opportunity to go over there, I'd like to probably do it again. And I know the church makes that available on occasion. But anyway, going back to history, and in my presentation to the kids, I'm going back to Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and telling that story. And, of course, those three men, there's not a whole lot said about them except for the incident that they went through. They were in the time of Daniel as well, but they were recorded different cases. And looking back at them, obviously you can see in history that they were taken into captivity. You know, when Judah was taken right around 604, I think, to 585 is when we kind of timed the captivity, that really took place. A lot of people were killed. Here comes a time, and the thing is why I say this now is because we're going through history now as well. And we can see and watch our country sinking and going down just like they did too. And there were people just like us who care. I know we care deeply for I love my country. We feel so blessed in this country. That's why it hurts so much when we see it caving and going down. Well, there were good people back in Judah, just like those people, the Daniels, the Shadrachs, the Meshachs, and other people that did care about Judah, that did care about their country, that did care about their morals and their values that were tanking at the time as well. God allowed many of these people to be taken into captivity. He spared a lot of those people. Now, many were killed, but these were ones that were there as well. So you kind of see where we fit with that. Here, we're watching the same thing that they did. You know, they felt that crunch as well. And yet there's ways that we can be happy and live through this and capture that zeal. So if you remember a couple of my first points that I gave on reestablishing that zeal, the one is remembering who we are. Remember that? Remembering who are we? You know, we are saints of God. We're first fruits, and we're on a course. We're on a plan. And no one can divert that plan when God is responsible and in charge. And as we yield to Him, nothing really happens to us unless God says it's okay. So we are on a plan. We have to remember that, because when you remember who we are, it causes us to remember what we have to do as well. The second point was reestablishing our commitment. Reestablishing our commitment. Sometimes we can let life sway us into different directions, and we need to be pulled back on that straight, narrow path, as Christ called it. The third one is recognizing our faults. That's pretty painful, isn't it? When we recognize our faults, it's so clear that we can see other people's faults. But recognizing our faults is sometimes pretty painful. We understand that sometimes those are pretty strong pulls. Everyone here can have pulls in a negative direction. And God wants us to overcome those, and He gives us, obviously, we see this through His plan. We come before Him on Passover to reestablish that commitment. Then we have a whole week of focusing on getting the leavening out of our lives, getting the sin out of our lives. And I've mentioned before that how can we be in the church for 30 and 40 years and still have sin on our lives? We've been practicing this for so many years. What happens that we still find those tidbits of leavening in our lives that we've got to get out? So we focus in on that. Yeah, that's pretty painful. But then we recognize the other part. There are some things that as we focus toward God's kingdom, that there's no way we can attain that kingdom without some of the things that we read in the Bible. What would you think are some of those things that we might need? There's no way we can step into God's kingdom without a few of these items that we see. Oh, there are probably quite a few of them. You know, the fruits of God's Spirit, love, joy, and peace. What about, though, humility? Remember what God said when he was blessing the little children? You can't enter the kingdom without that element. So humility is important. But here's another element, and there's no way we could step into God's kingdom without this too. And that's God's mercy. That's what I'd like to talk about today. Mercy is an element that can help us to rekindle our zeal again, because without that, we're done. And you know that. Without God's forgiveness, without his mercy, and sometimes we underestimate God's mercy. How can God ever forgive me for that, we would say. And yet sometimes our sins can be continuous. We'll get up and we'll fall. We'll get up and we'll fall. And it frustrates us to no end sometimes. And as long as God's mercy is there and we continue to get up and plod forward, we're going to make it. It talks about overcoming. And we can do this. We can overcome through the help of God, but we've got to count on his mercy. So I'd like to go there today and talk about a little thing that took place long ago. It says, Charlie, France, God, and You, a lesson from a World War II flying ace. This took place, I don't know, before I was even a thought, December 20, 1943. It says here, two planes met, over the skies of Western Europe. And Messerschmitt, I don't know if you have ever seen the German aces and the war machines that they had then, nothing like we had now, but they were pretty fast. They were pretty quick. Some of the stories are very interesting. And it says here, a Boeing B-17. The men were the American bomber pilot. His name was Charlie Brown, not the one that you see in the cartoon character. 21-year-old Charlie Brown and a German fighter pilot. 22 kills to his record. A former airline pilot from Bavaria. His name was Franz Stigler. We'll go into that, in a little bit. But there are those today, let me start out here, who believe that there is a God today who is different from the God of the Old Testament. It seems to some that the God of the New Covenant is one who is a kinder God, as opposed to the cruel and harsh God who led the Israelites out of Egypt through the ruthless killing of the firstborn, then on through Canaan to where many men, women, and children, and animals were victimized by a God who either killed them who drove them out. I don't know if you've ever gotten that perspective. I've had before. I've seen people that focused in and thought that God was and didn't realize or understand why God did what he did. And in fact, so many of those killings we would call mercy killings because the people had become so corrupted that it was better for them, even through the flood, for those people to be resurrected to a new world rather than continuing on being depraved and getting to the point where they were. And this is where we're seeing today. How could we even see in our world today that our country could get where it is today? Thank you, Mr. Wooten. Appreciate that. How many people truly read the Bible and have the understanding that it takes to really know God? What does that mean for you and I? In Exodus chapter 20, let's turn over here. Exodus chapter 20. This is the God that we're going to be teaching people of. In the kingdom, part of our responsibility will be to pass down what we've been blessed with, what we've been given as well. We are here now to perfect this. We're in virtual classes. As Mr. Faulkner said, you can still go online and get so much information, so many classes. And what a wonderful thing it was, I know for me back in college when you went to Ambassador College, my entire week was that. For 5 years, I would go to classes all day. Then you'd have the Sabbath with everybody. Then you'd have some kind of function on Sunday. All with God's people. It was a millennial-type atmosphere. Such a wonderful blessing. I got that all the time. We don't get that all the time because we have to go back out into the world. We get pieces of it. And even the meetings that were talked about, I can understand the spirit of the camaraderie that they have because we get pieces of that in November when I go to the camp meetings. You know, we have differences and disagreements here and there as well, but we come together with one product, and it's focusing in on our children and the importance of teaching them for the limited time that we've got and how fast the time goes by, and we get so much done and we laugh so much. I love to share that. Here's the God that we try to focus on here. In verse 1, God spoke all these words, saying, I am the Lord your God who has brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make to you any graven image or likeness of anything that's in heaven above, or that's in the earth beneath, or that's in the water under the earth. You shall not bow yourself down to them nor serve them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children of the third and fourth generations of those who hate me, and showing mercy to thousands of those who love me and keep my commandments. Now, there was one here, a testimony of God's mercy, plus the one that I spoke of as well with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. You know, it's interesting. What did they reject? What did they reject? The first two commandments that you just saw here. They knew that. They were taken into captivity because of the beliefs that they held, but they weren't even slow to answer the king, were they? Remember what they said? Oh, king, we're not even slow to answer you. This was great King Nebuchadnezzar that built the statue to himself and said, now you're to bow down and worship me. And Shadrach, I thought, you know, thinking this out and the reasoning that we could have, I even thought, you know, could they at least maybe go down like they were pretending to kneel and maybe come within like an inch, but they could say, well, I didn't bow down to him. I didn't go all the way down on my knees. They didn't argue the point at all. They go, we're not doing it. And even at the point of death, those first two commandments, you can see how close they were to be sacrificed in a burning fiery furnace. What would that be like to be faced with that? Very interesting as we see these testimonies. But in 1 Kings chapter 3 and verse 5, 1 Kings 3 verse 5, let's look at this testimony here. 1 Kings chapter 3, verse 5. So you get here, the king Gibeah, the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream by night and asked God what I shall give to you. And of course, we know the story that takes place. Solomon, in his wisdom, asked for wisdom and understanding, not the gold or anything else. But let's continue. Let's go over to chapter 8 and verse 17. 1 Kings 8, verse 17. And it was in the heart of David, my father, to build a house for the name of the Lord God of Israel. And the Lord said to David, my father, whereas it was in your heart to build a house to my name, you did well that it was in your heart. Nevertheless, you shall not build the house, but your son that will come up forth out of your loins, he will build the house to my name. And the Lord has performed his word that he spoke, and I have risen up in the room of David my father and sit on the throne of Israel, as the Lord promised, and have built a house for the name of the Lord God of Israel. And I have set a place there, the ark, more on this in a little bit, this ark, wherein is the covenant of the Lord, which he made with our fathers when he brought them out of the land of Egypt. And Solomon stood before the altar of the Lord in the presence of all the congregation of Israel, spread forth his hands toward heaven, and he said, the Lord God of Israel, there is no God like you in heaven above or on earth beneath, who keeps covenant and mercy with your servants that walk with you with all their heart. It was kept with your servant David, my father, that you promised him. You spoke also with your mouth and have fulfilled it with your hand as it is to this day. Look how God's mercy, as you know the testimonies, you and I read through that and you would see how many times God just would get fed up and just go, I'm done. How many times does God forgive? How great is his mercy? Read the story about the Israelites. You know, sometimes we end up being just like them, descendants, stiff-necked, as he called them, backsliding. So let's see God's mercy extended to a pretty decent king, to Solomon and to David, but now let's see his mercy extended to a wicked king. 1 Kings chapter 21. 1 Kings chapter 21 and verse 25. How great is God's mercy? I bet you could answer that. We've gone through Bible study for quite a long time for many of us. How great is God's mercy? Is heaven as high as the earth? As far as east is from the west? That's in the scripture. God's mercy is incredible. You know, when I say this, when we truly meditate and think about this and take this into our heart, if that doesn't bring us up in our zeal level, what will? Yes, God is so great and so merciful. 1 Kings 21, verse 25, is anybody here as wicked as King Ahab? I hope not. I don't think so. We certainly have our faults, but this was one bad king. Verse 25 of 1 Kings 21, there was none like to Ahab who did sell himself to work wickedness in the sight of the Lord, whom Jezebel, his wife, stirred up. Bad apples. And he did very abominably in following idols according to the things as did the Amorites, whom the Lord cast out before the children of Israel. And it came to pass when Ahab heard those words that he tore his clothes and put sackcloth upon his flesh, and he fasted and lay in sackcloth, and he walked softly and quietly. And the word of the Lord came to Elijah, saying, see how Ahab humbles himself. God knows who's playing games and who's not playing games. He saw how with the change in Ahab. So if we look at this here, is anybody as bad as Ahab? To work wickedness, to follow idols, to do all these things. And look how merciful he is toward Ahab. Because he humbles himself before me, I will not bring the evil in his days, but in his son's days will I bring the evil upon his house. Remember what God said in visiting the iniquity of the fathers to the third and fourth generation back in Exodus. We just read that. So what happened to his kids? You know, sometimes we look at this and oh, the concern is out there. It certainly is for me as a father and a grandfather. If this doesn't happen in my lifetime, it may happen to my kids. It may happen to my grandkids. Some people are going to see evil beyond what we've ever seen before. We've been so protected in this country. In Deuteronomy chapter 12, verse 29. Deuteronomy chapter 12 and verse 29. We see this happening more and more. We see the Bible being tossed out. Oh, it's coming, probably a lot more than we ever see now. You know, tearing down statues, things of that nature. You know, maybe the Audian museums, I'm not sure, but all I know is rulings and judgments that are being made that are taking God out of this country. We've seen that happen for years. Deuteronomy 12, verse 29, but here we are witnessing this. When the Lord your God will cut off the nations from before you, where you go to possess them and you succeed them and dwell in their land, take heed to yourself that you not be snared by following them, after they are destroyed from before you, and that you inquire not after the gods, saying, how do these nations serve their gods? So will I do likewise. You shall not do to the Lord your God for every abomination of the Lord which he hates, they have done to their gods. For even their sons and daughters they have burnt in the fire to their gods. That's incredible to even think that. To even think that parents would offer their kids in a fire? What happens to the mind when it gets like that? Well, what gets in people's minds today when you get a group of politicians together and they start to rejoice because of the new abortion law that you can now take one at full term and kill the kids at full term? What's the difference? Verse 32, whatever thing I command you, observe to do. You will not add that or diminish from it. And so this is where we practice. We peel into the words of the Bible and find out what God's will is for us in our lives, to find out where we can be sharpened, and find out those little elements that are still missing, that we still need to get out those bits of leavening. So we look, we study, we pray, and that becomes our lifetime. And then we recognize sometimes how bad we might be as we look in the mirror. I'm just, God, how can you even deal with me? Mercy, forgiveness, all these elements. And so we have the testimonies of the laws of God, of the nature and character of God, and of the mercy and kindness exhibited by the God of both the Old and the New Covenant. And Christ came to witness of that same law which he gave to the Israelites. In Matthew chapter 5 and verse 17. Matthew chapter 5 and verse 17. And remember, we went through that for those that have been around for a few years here, back into our original large church congregations that we came from. We saw these things happen right before our very eyes. Matthew 5, verse 17, and here's scriptures that they used. Don't think that I've come to destroy the law or the prophets. I didn't not come to destroy, but to fulfill. And so they would say, well, it's been fulfilled. So now you don't have to do it anymore. Did you ever think about that? I'm sure you have. That didn't make sense. So Christ came to fulfill the law, so now it's all done away with, and you don't have to do it anymore. And I use the analogy, stop at a stop sign. That's a law, isn't it? You have to stop at a stop sign. Did you ever get ticketed or stopped for a rolling stop? I don't know if I was ticketed, but I remember I did a rolling stop. And so I got pulled over. This is years and years ago when I was a teen, I believe. Rolling stop. He says, you didn't stop fully. And so I said, really, that's a law. Yes, it is. And you can get ticketed for that. So you've got to stop all the way. And then if you do, people would say, according to this, that you don't ever have to stop anymore. Christ came and stopped at that stop sign. So now you don't have to stop anymore. Is that true? Did that do away with the law? Well, they use that here. He fulfilled it, so you don't have to do it anymore. And then he says in verse 18, I say to you, until heaven and earth pass, not one jot nor tittle will pass from the law until it's all fulfilled. And it's not all been fulfilled, has it? Heaven and earth have not passed. The big problem here is how those who have interpreted Christ's statement on the stake when he said, it's finished. But he said in verse 19, therefore, who shall break one of these least commandments and teach men so will be called the least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever shall do them and teach them, the same shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven. That should be an encouraging verse right there for us, shouldn't it? Do you teach that? I do. Do I teach it perfectly? No. Am I working on it? Yes. I've got the rest of my life to do this. It's exciting that when you get kids and grandkids, or we get groups of campers, and you can share these things and believe firmly in them and say, hey, this is the way. Walk in it. And we can try to be encouraging about it and for them to have fun in the process. But the Pharisees and the others added and diminished from God's laws. One I'll never forget. This is one of the first ones that I remember, because the Jews had their own sets of laws in a book recorded called the Talmud. And on the Sabbath, you can lift over half the weight of a dried fig. Who came up with that idea? So that's easy to remember. You couldn't lift over half the weight of a dried fig. I couldn't lift this notebook then. Today, you can't go up an elevator in Israel because you'd have to push a button that would kindle a fire. That's their interpretation. So instead, you got to walk up the steps. Instead of pushing a button, adding to the law, binding heavy burdens upon the people, that's what they were taught. That's what Christ was talking about. They were the ones who were harsh and cruel, not God. Matthew chapter 23. As we'll continue on the slideshow here, this is the point here. We have lots of laws, don't we? 10 commandments, but there's more than just that. Laws of clean and unclean. People say, well, you have got all those rules and all those laws. And go, yeah, those are the ones that keep us healthy, that keep us happy. It's so interesting, but we've had in the past years, we've had a wild hog problem in Tennessee. And so they're telling people, you can go shoot as many as you want. And then they also catch them, because it's so hard to keep the population down, they just keep repopulating. So they'll catch them in pens sometimes, and people can come in and take all that they want, but you got to wear gloves to touch them. I thought, that's interesting. They say they're so toxic that you can't even touch them or handle them with your bare hands. What did God say? Don't touch them. Don't eat them. He created them for a purpose. So people eat them today? I go, you can't even touch them. How do you even eat them? So very interesting on what makes sense in God's laws. In verse 23 of Matthew 23, though, he says, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you pay tithe of mint and anise and cumin and have omitted the weightier matters of the law." Judgment. And that's talking about righteous judgment, obviously. That's what we're practicing. And that's what we're trying to get better at. We don't always judge the greatest ways, do we? Sometimes we misjudge. Sometimes that catches us. I've seen things happen that I thought things were a certain way. They weren't. You render a judgment and find out later that I didn't have all the facts on that. Judgment, mercy, and faith. If God is so merciful to us, and I think about that and sing that song sometimes, be merciful to others as your Father. You know, when you get mad at somebody, sing that song. Remember God's mercy. And you know what it does? It helps you to smile a bit more. It keeps you from getting cranky. Being merciful can lift you up. So here we see, Messerschmitt 101, the most produced fighter in aviation history. There were 34,000 built. They went 385 miles an hour, fuel injected so it can dive without losing power and climb. And you get the B-17, they called that the Flying Fortress. Devastating long-range bomber able to protect itself due to the placed gun canopies on it. Able to return home even when it was shot up to pieces. That's why I always felt pretty comfortable with flying. They used to fly some of these planes and they were just all shot up and they would still take them up. Of the 1.5 metric tons of bombs dropped in World War II, the B-17 dropped nearly half of them, 640,000 tons. This was a plane that one would shoot down in a second to prevent the damage that it can inflict on a city. So you got the bomber pilot, 21 years old. Thought that was interesting. When we were in the Cold War, I know in the Civil Air Patrol National Conference, we had a man that had flown all the shuttles that had also participated in the Cold War, and they would go up just like they do today. You probably heard that we had to intercept a Russian plane that got too close to Alaska. This has been going on for years. Sometimes we just don't know about it. But the pilots that go up there, there are certain cues that they have, that if the Russians hear our doors open to shoot them, they're told right away, you shoot them down, if they even hear that. And when this happened back in the Cold War, you had kids 18, 19, 20 years old that could have started World War III just because of an incident that would be set off. This is how young they were, 21 years old. What a huge responsibility. But Second Lieutenant Charlie Brown was a farm boy from Weston, West Virginia. In his own words, he would say, he was a B-17 pilot with the U.S. Army Air Forces stationed in England. The incident, Franz Stigler had a duty to shoot down the American plane. It was an enemy plane. It was defenseless. It had just bombed Bremen, so it doesn't have any air support. But instead of shooting it down with one pull of his trigger, he spared it, even to his own hurt. Why? Very interesting what goes into the mind of men. Revelation chapter 2, the box. Why is this important now? This brings out the point. What was it called? Revelation chapter 2. Revelation 2, verse 11. He that has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. He who overcomes will not be hurt by the second death. And to the angel of the church in Pergamos write, these things says he who has the sharp sword with two edges. I know your works and where you dwell, even where Satan's seat. This is the Greek word for thronos. This is where you get thrown from. I know your works and where you dwell. and you hold fast my name. Could you imagine living in that area at the time, living in Pergamos at the time where he called it Satan's seat? And you hold fast my name. You have not denied my faith, even those in where Antipas was my faithful martyr who was slain among you where Satan dwells. But I have a few things against you. Can you imagine the overcoming that had to be done and how they were faithful? And yet he still points out a weakness in this church. You have those among you who hold the doctrine of Balaam, who taught Balak to cast a stumbling block before the children of Israel, to eat things sacrificed to idols and to commit fornication. So I have also those who hold the doctrine of the Nicolaitans, which things I hate. When you see the things that we're coming to in this box, what's so important about it? Carried, contained three things carried by the priests. It was made of gopher wood. What was the box? Remember that. Now, I don't think it looked anything like that. I believe that it says the cherubim overshadowed the mercy seat. So we tried sometimes to depict what it is, but problem is nobody's ever seen it. They're still trying to find it. Somebody might find it one day. Maybe they won't. They still try to find Noah's Ark. But it's called the Ark of the Covenant. It's called the Ark of the Testimony. What was the most important part? You probably all know because the topic I'm talking about. What was it called? Let's talk about thrones first before you get, now you're getting to it. You're right, the mercy seat. The thrones that we've had for, still have the ones that they believe the past kings were coronated on, sitting in England. This is the throne of Emperor Akito. It's called the Chrysanthemum Throne. There's another throne called the Peacock Throne, the throne of the Shah of Iran, emblematic of wealth. As we just said, going through Revelation, describes Satan's throne. And now we get to the mercy seat, most important throne you'll ever see. Of all the virtues of God, the one he has chosen which to base his reign is not wealth, it's mercy. So we find here the building of this mercy seat in Exodus chapter 25. I'll read this here. You shall make a mercy seat of pure gold. 2.5 cubits will be its length and 1.5 cubits its width. And you shall make cherubim of gold of hammered work. You shall make them at the two ends of the mercy seat. You'll put the mercy seat on top of the ark. And in the ark, you'll put the testimony that I will give to you. So it's still a little bit vague. But when you put that together, it certainly wasn't like the one that we just saw. And there I will meet with you, and I'll speak with you from above the mercy seat, from between the two cherubim, which are on the Ark of the Testimony. About everything will I give to you in the commandment to the children of Israel. And then in 1 Samuel chapter 4, and verse 4, here it says, so the people sent to Shiloh that they might bring there the Ark of the Covenant to the Lord of Hosts, who dwells between the cherubim, and the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, were there with the Ark of the Covenant of God. So what's important about this mercy? Hebrews chapter 9 and verse 4, let's look a little bit more here about what it talks about. Hebrews chapter 9. Hebrews chapter 9, verse 4, here it talks about the ark, it says, which had the golden censer, and the ark of the covenant overlaid round about with gold, wherein was the golden pot that had manna, and Aaron's rod that budded, and the tables of the covenant. That's why it's also called the Ark of the Testimony. These were all testimonies of what God did, of how God worked. The Ark of the Testimony, the Ark of the Covenant with the mercy seat. It says in verse 5, and over it the cherubims of glory shadowing the mercy seat. Shadowing the mercy seat. So it had to be over that. Not like two little, I always say, hood ornaments, as we say. But you know something? Even that's the best that they could do. Because they said, of which we cannot now speak particularly. Why? They never saw it. They heard about it, but they never saw it. They never saw the ark. Now, ark can mean, it comes from the Hebrew called Aron, Aron, or Aron, Aron, in the sense of gathering, an ark, a chest. In the Greek, it's called kibotos, K-I-B-O-T-O-S. It says a box that is the sacred ark, and it says also from that which is of Noah. So we call it even that kind of a box. So no one really knows, well, it does lay out the dimensions, but the exact specifications, so hard to define. But the most important part is not just that physical box, but the meaning behind it, that mercy. In Psalm 1, chapter 136, let's go to 136 and verse 1. Mercy is a word of mentioned 261 times in the Bible. 261 times you'll find it mentioned. Psalm 136. Here the word is used 25 times. Psalm 136, let's read through some of these here. Oh, give thanks to the Lord, for he is good, for his mercy endures forever. Give thanks to the God of gods, for his mercy endures forever. Give thanks to the Lord of lords, for his mercy endures forever. He who alone does great works, his mercy endures forever. Thankfully, we've got a great song about this. So we sing it. To him that by wisdom made the heavens, for his mercy endures forever. To he that stretched the earth above the waters. This brings us back to reality. We've got so many distractions in this world today. When you bring it back to, here we're able to stop on the Sabbath day. You know, I look at the mountains. I've told you when I watch the programs, when I watch Planet Earth, all that we can attribute to God. He made everything, and for a purpose, for you and I. Satan on his throne wants to distract us from what is most important. This brings us back to the reality. He who made the great lights. Do people teach their kids that God made those? When they come up, when they rise, when they go down? The sun to rule by the day. You know, some of the details we forget. Somebody said if the sun was so much closer, if we were just a tad closer, things would not work the way they do. It's all perfection. The moon and stars to rule by night. His mercy endures forever. So they could actually leave Egypt by night because of that moon and those stars that shone. He who smote Egypt in their firstborn, his mercy endures forever, and brought Israel from among them. His mercy endures forever with a strong hand and with a stretched out arm, for his mercy endures forever. He who divided the Red Sea into parts, for his mercy endures forever. Made Israel to pass through the midst of it, for his mercy endures forever. Mercy from the word chesed, meaning kindness, by implication toward God. Piety, like you saw with Ahab. Favor, kindness, pity. So we ask the same question. Is this an attribute that we have? How important is this? Weightier matters of the law. Judgment, mercy, and faith. Are we kind? It's a nice time to take a look at that. Have we been kind this week? Or have we been short-tempered? This is an attribute of God that he always has. Does he get mad? We know that. But it does say, but his anger only exists for a moment because his character is love and mercy. Sometimes we forget that. And when we do, we become less passionate and less zealous. So what does this have to do with these two guys who met in planes? Why did Franz Ziegler not pull the trigger? He had every reason to, because Charlie Brown was an enemy and he was killing a lot of people. He bombed German cities. Stigler had a duty to defend his homeland. One more kill and he would have received the Iron Cross. What happened to this man? Why didn't he pull the trigger? So Charlie Brown always wondered what happened to that plane and the man that didn't shoot him down. Years later, he went looking for Stigler. It took years, but he found him. Stigler had left Germany and moved to Canada. Charlie Brown found him there, and a book was written, Higher Call, that spoke about this. So why didn't he shoot? As Franz Stigler looked through the eyeglass with his finger on the trigger, these words ran through his head. Matthew 5, verse 7. Blessed are the merciful, for they will obtain mercy. Why at that time? Why at that time? So what are we going to do? Here you see two men that weren't converted. And it ran through somebody's mind to not pull that trigger. And I'll come up with a verse. We have a calling to become like God. God has chosen to base his throne on mercy. Are we going to be like God and show mercy? What's going to happen in the kingdom for us? Oh, we're getting a lot of training now. And plan on getting more. Are there things that kind of irritate you this past week? You get tired of hearing about a lot of this? What's going on? The arguments go back and forth. You wonder what's true, what's not true. The frustrations that are there. Can we not stop and see what's happening to us sometimes? That's why I said sometimes we watch too much news. At one point when I was lower in my life, at that time when I felt kind of depressed, I told my wife, I go, you know something? I've not been singing. I need to get out my guitar or something. I need to play more music. I need to sing more as we find ourselves getting depressed. It's what we put into our minds. God says, blessed are the merciful, for they will obtain mercy. God's mercy never fails. Let's finish here in this chapter of Psalm 136. Verse 17, to he who smote great kings, for his mercy endures forever, and slew famous kings, for his mercy endures forever. Then he went to examples. Sihon, the king of the Amorites, for his mercy endures forever. And Og, the king of Bashan, for his mercy endures forever. David probably knew these guys. We don't. So it's harder for us to see the bad things, the negative things he did. I can see, even pointed out, even with King Solomon. Solomon was, if you'd put him in a category, probably one of the better kings. Now, what we can't prove is if he endured, it's not clear. If he fell away, if he returned, it's just not clear. But overall, God allowed him to build a temple, didn't he? But you know, Solomon, one of his flaws? Ladies, women. And not that women are near a flaw, they're a blessing. But I'm so grateful that God gives us one. He had lots of them. 600 plus? Do you think any of the guys in Israel were mad at Solomon? Did you ever think about that? Solomon took all the prime ones. He had a good looking one, I want that one. Maybe she was courting another guy. And Solomon said, no, I want her. My guess is there are a lot of guys in Israel that wanted to kill him. He just couldn't have enough. But we never really think about that. We didn't live in those days. We'll find out. We'll see that. You know, all these people we're gonna see again. How many? You've heard of him? You're going to see this Sihon and Og in the second resurrection. When you see all that they did, you know, when you see, bring it maybe to our day and age and for our children, they didn't go through that. How many forget the stories about Hitler and the Gestapo? And how many people are going to have to be as merciful to others as God is with us? See, we've run through these for years. We've seen that. We're still practicing it because we're in a world that has people. And when you have a world that has people, some people are just going to make you mad. And it happens even within our own families, doesn't it? So we have to practice mercy on a regular basis. Verse 21, it says, and gave their land for a heritage, for his mercy endures forever. A heritage to Israel, his servant, for his mercy endures forever. Who remembered us in our low estate, for his mercy endures forever. Has redeemed us from our enemies, for his mercy endures forever. Who gives food to all flesh, for his mercy endures forever. You know, Matthew chapter 6, you don't have to turn there if you want to write that down. God said, you know, we have our concerns out there, don't we? We've got concerns. I'll call it, in fairness, I think headquarters is appropriately mentioned, that there's concern, but not overwhelming despair. There's uncertainty. We don't know. But you know, whatever happens, we're right on track. We're right on track with God's plan. It's not being diverted. It's going forth. God didn't turn his head and go, oh, I let that one slip. We just have to be on the same path, on the same track. And when we're focused like that, all this other stuff, even as uncertain as it is, won't matter. As long as we're focused, as long as we're learning, as all we're studying, we're growing, we're staying close to God. Our focus and anything that happens will not pull us down. And that's got to be practiced, because you see some that are just maybe better at being positive. And some people say, well, they're just smiling all the time. It's ridiculous. They're being fake. Well, some people just practice that, and that's the way that they are. They're happier people. I know Mr. Frenchek, if he ever gets to give his pre-Feast of Tabernacles sermon, he talks about not being grumpy at the feast. How can one be grumpy at the feast? Well, it can happen. Things happen. You know, God's going to take care of us. He promises that. So whatever happens here, I think my wife helped me with that perspective, because you wonder, are we going to have the feast? Oh, I hope we can have a choir still. What if we don't? The kingdom is still that much closer to us, the real thing. So what do we want? This, which is awesome, or the real thing, which is better than awesome? The real millennium that you and I are being trained to be a part of. But these are important principles. Number one, we have to understand God's mercy. And number two, we've got to exercise God's mercy. It needs to be a part of us, just as it is with his character as well. When you get a man like this that had a thought run through his mind and had spared an individual from death with one pull of the trigger, if he's got that, he thought about it, this is the point. What about us who know this, who understand it, who are trying to practice that? You know, if you see these points of understanding who we are as the people of God, there's a higher requirement. Remembering what we went through to get to this point. Remembering our commitment. Two commitments, the most important commitments in your life. Commitment to God. Commitment to a spouse. Two important commitments. And God's so merciful. God remembers when we fall, when we fall short. We get on our knees, don't ever think, oh, he can't forgive me for this. If you get on your knees and you're sincere about it, he will forgive you. Does he get angry at us like a father would? I imagine so. But thankfully, his anger doesn't last like ours does sometimes. You know why the Bible says, you know, don't let the sun go down in your wrath? Because it affects us. It affects our zeal. Can you get up the next morning when you're mad at night and get up and kind of go, a new day, this is great? Or is it going to be another bad one? We ought to be in the process of having a lot more good days despite what's happening in this world now, because we know we're the people of God. Verse 26, we'll end here. Oh, give thanks unto the God of heaven, for his mercy endures forever. Let us never forget God's mercy.